You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
And I'm Tim Lorden. I'm the Executive Director of the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, and welcome, Mr. Harbor. Thank you for joining us. I think I sent the invitation in Mr. Harbor's extensive biography. We want to congratulate you on the European you're a governor of the European Internet Foundation, which is the Congressional Internet Caucus.
Right.
Counterpart in Europe.
We just celebrated 10 years of since we were founded.
Congratulations. I was going to bake a cake, but I baked cookies instead.
Thank you very much.
And I know you had a cake cutting like a week ago, two weeks ago?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we had a meeting with Mrs. Cruz, the commissioner.
So 10 years. The Congressional Internet Caucus is around for 14. We're going to celebrate our 15th anniversary next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can come.
It would be nice to come.
Okay.
We'd like to try and do that. So.
And so today, what I thought we would do is have a conversation. As I laid out, we have a few questions we'd love to ask you about how things are working. You're the chairman of the Committee on Internal Markets and Consumer Protection. We'd love to ask you questions about some of the work you've been doing from your perspective in Europe on technology issues.
Okay.
They range from privacy and security, we've got a cloud computing, standardization, revisiting of the cookies compromise from, 2002, Mark? A variety of other questions. But what I should do is kind of open it up to any questions or allow anyone to ask any questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine, yes.
But I should let you make an introduction.
Do you want a short overview, first of all?
That'd be fantastic. Yeah, okay. I mean, I know you have press for time, so whatever you can
provide. No, I'm very relaxed. So I just need to get to the airport for a 5:30 flight to Seattle. So, where I'm going to see Microsoft tomorrow, that won't be a surprise to anybody. But I've never been there before, so I thought I'd ought at least to go to see what was, just to get a glimmer of what goes on at the great Redmond campus. But anyway, Tim, it's really nice to be here because I've had a long working relationship with the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee and you in particular. And it's Sandy. We've had many good meetings here and elsewhere in Washington over the years. So a year ago I became chairman of the Internal Market and Consumer Protection Committee in the European Parliament. And so one of my legislative interests in the Parliament for 10 years has been and still continues to be telecoms legislation, but that's only a relatively small part actually of what I'm working on now, though I still continue to sustain an interest in it. And I was in the interesting position of having been the rapporteur in European Parliament speak, or the MEP who was responsible for taking part of the original 2000 telecoms, 2001, it was actually formally incorporated for the 2000 package through the European Parliament, where I did the universal service and users' rights part of that. And then when the Commission did its revision of the whole telecom package, which started in 2008, then I was asked to become the rapporteur again. So I actually ended up being responsible for revisions to my own original legislation. So that has been a slightly unusual position to be in. So I have quite a long institutional memory about the development of this legislation, and I've been following it very closely. And during that time, I've also had a lot of contacts with the FCC. Unfortunately, even though the chairman of the FCC was keen to meet me, we couldn't fit it in on this trip around. But I'm hoping that I'll get to the FCC again before too long. But certainly we've had visits from the FCC in Europe as well, because I think there's been a lot of interest in the parallel development of a number of legislative issues in the US and in Europe, because essentially it's been a journey for both spaces, both in the, I would say the European Union, the 27 countries, and the US. And I had a very interesting hour yesterday with Rick Boucher, who of course is now a committee chairman as well in his own right, someone who has been a constant factor through the time of the Congressional Internet Caucus. I think he's still a co-chairman, isn't it?
Founding chair and
founding
continuing chair.
Yeah.
I think he's chair for life, actually.
So we got down to business straight away about some of the things that his committee has been working on, particularly about the net neutrality provisions, which I think are about to be published, aren't they, next week. But so we discussed some of the aspects of that, because I think a lot of that's going to be modelled on what we've done in Europe, which I think is interesting from our perspective, because we some elements that was incorporated as a relatively small but important element of the User's Rights Directive, which caused a lot of interest. But actually, the User's Rights Directive had a lot of other really important provisions for consumers, particularly over more price transparency, more transparency over service conditions, including network management and quality of service, more data being made for independent price comparison sites, particularly number portability, to enforce number portability and number portability requirements much more strictly. And we've also got some interesting public service provisions which were in the original framework that we've been moving forward on things like caller location, making that a mandatory requirement. That was actually in the original proposal, but the technical standards haven't yet caught up with that. And also, there has been concern, obviously, in times of public expenditure about the expenditure needed for public authorities or emergency authorities to actually make use of the caller location information, which has not always been the case up to now. But I think we've made some progress on that anyway. But I think it's worth noting in the broader context that the fundamental provisions of competition law regulation in Europe remain fundamentally unaltered by the reforms. There was a lot of debate as to whether legislation that was originally based on a local loop unbundling, deregulating a market in which historic state-owned telecom businesses had dominated markets, then opening up that market by unbundling the local copper loops and then having mandatory access provisions, whether that provision should be rolled over into an era where we will have new networks, new private sector investment in fiber and wireless networks as well to deliver high capacity broadband signals. And it was decided that basically the requirement for mandatory access would remain for new networks also. This is, in, as you know, is where the European legislation diverges significantly from the way the US has gone. And in a way, I think we're now in the process of seeing which solution is going to work better. And I would say the other linking piece to all of this is the question of universal service. When the original proposal was put together in 2000, the issue of universal service and a universal fixed line telephony service as an entitlement was still on the political agenda. Of course, in 2010, statistically in Europe now, every European citizen has more than one mobile telephone. And so it shows how the whole, how technology, trying to make technology neutral legislation remains very difficult. So the whole concept of universal service and universal funding, I think universal service funding is going to be rethought. And the Commission is currently consulting on this at the moment, and there will be a green paper out on this shortly. And again, it was interesting talking to Bob Boucher because that's an issue that his committee is also working on at the moment. And the crucial aspect of that is what is going to be a universal entitlement in terms of broadband connectivity now, functional broadband. How is that going to be delivered? How will member states fund that? And part of the provisions in the telecom framework were to ensure that universal service funds were handled in an open, transparent, and competitive manner. In other words, the universal service fund couldn't be used as an obstacle to deter new entrants to the market. Now, that may still be the case, and we'll have to see. On the other hand, there is a view, and I tend to side a bit with this view, though we're waiting to see the Commission's proposal, is that the national telecom regulators in every country actually have the powers to work with governments on funding mechanisms and to ensure competitive allocations in any case, and we don't necessarily need to make that a heavyweight European requirement, that it could be left to member states to do that. I think the most interesting issue, though, which again is one that's being worked on here, is about the public investment in broadband networks in areas where it's clearly going to be difficult to get investment made on a competitive basis, simply because the cost to connect is going to be too high. And how we are actually going to do that, what mechanisms we're going to use. I mean, I think there will be quite a lot of mechanisms that will be looked at much more on a decentralized local funding basis than we've seen before. In other words, where regional consortiums will be put together in a form of public-private partnership, and where there will be other aspects brought into play. In other words, it won't just be money on the table will be part of it, but the other things that could be brought into play would be, for example, a consolidation of all the public sector broadband demand in a particular region, whether it's from education, whether it's health, whether it's security, whether it's transportation, whether it's the normal public sector networks. In other words, a core piece of demand that transfers onto broadband networks. There will also be questions of infrastructure sharing with other public utilities, whether that's also brought into play, rights of way and so on. And that could be assembled as a package and investment bids invited together with a piece of funding. And the investment bids could then be judged on how much of public funding they needed to make it a viable business. In other words, you wouldn't say it was an absolute amount. You'd just cap the amount and say, that's on the table. We'll look at your bids, the quality of your bids. And I think the other evolutionary issue is about how you move from what you might call functional broadband. And what does that mean these days? I mean, when we wrote the papers last year, we put in a clause suggesting that at least a 2 megabit universal service could be required by member states. That's probably too low now. But interestingly, and I've just given you now the Mrs. Nelly Cruz, the European Commissioner's digital agenda, which is actually available in card format, but unfortunately we left the cards at the hotel because you were supposed to get them, but we can drop them by later, or Shana can pop them through the letterbox, because we like to have these, as many as we have. But Mrs. Crowes is going around giving everybody the digital agenda card, and if you look at them, we've just copied them for you, but if you look at the top left-hand target number one, you will see what's on the table in the European space. Now, we haven't had sort of formal buy-in to all these targets by every member state, but I think most people are working around that. So essentially, to have by 2020, essentially a universal service of 30 megabits, which is way beyond the universal service commitment we have at the moment. But on top of that, to have 50% of households with broadband above 100 megabits. Now, you know, plans for both of those are obviously being looked at. I think there is a credible opportunity to achieve the 50% without the need for any public funding, because I think most of the high population density areas in Europe, which will be covered by that, there is probably sufficient demand that would justify a private investment. On the 30 megabit, there's clearly going to have to need to be some public subventions, and I think that some of the work that's going on in countries, including the new UK government, may well have a phased rollout, so that the first stage is to go to functional broadband, basic broadband, as described here, but with migration plans to go to high capacity later. Nope. It's interesting that in Ireland, for example, the Irish government has just let a contract to Hutchison 3 to deliver broadband wirelessly to the whole of Ireland at the moment. So,
how do you define digital inclusion? How do you define? There's been a debate today, actually, because we have the FCC 706 report talking about distribution coverage. How do you define regular internet use? There's a discussion between deployment today. Yeah. And subscribership, that seems to be our debate.
Yeah. The answer is I don't know that. You'd have to. I don't know off the top of my head, but this is backed up by a 100-page document. So if you download that, you can find the answer.
Okay, fair enough.
When you don't know these things.
We don't agree on a lot of these things either, so some of these definitions are sticky.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, I thought you might like to know that at least we have some targets floating around now and that we're being taken around the place. So anyway, that's just a bit of background.
What is the definition of the data rate for basic broadband?
I think the answer is there isn't a definition. I think that's why it's called basic broadband. As I said earlier, I think nobody wants to be pinned down to a definition because it's changing all the time. Okay. But I mean, in practical terms, I prefer the definition of functional broadband. But most countries are looking, I would say, between 2 and 5 as a sort of starting point. I think the Irish package is going up to 5, which is being delivered through the existing the existing or the next evolution. I've lost count of because there are so many new acronyms going around, but it's what's beyond 3G is next generation something or other. NG, who's in the mobile business here? Help me out.
Well, we use LTE.
LTE,
we also
that's
use 4G.
No, LTE, long-term evolution. LTE was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Not London Transport Executive. I mean, it's acronyms.
Well, I also know...
There's an app, by the way, anyone in the app business, there's an app waiting to be written here, an acronym APT. App for public policymakers, which will be updated hourly because every hour somebody invents a new acronym for a new agency.
I think that's a great idea. Is there an app for that?
No, I think you should do one.
You can
get some revenue for your ICAC now.
That'll be our funding base. That'll be great.
You could start one on Capitol Hill. So anyway, that was a slightly rambling introduction, but just to bring you up to date with some of the sort of contemporary developments. So I know that you folks are also very interested in data protection, so just data protection and issues. Let me add a few words on that.
Well, let me before you just move off of broadband and
yeah.
A lot of people. We asked folks within the advisory committee, like 1,000 different people, for questions for today. One of them was net neutrality. I'm sorry to bring that up.
No,
but it's something we keep talking about.
My mailboxes are full of it.
So in the telecoms package, there was some language that you had put together about net neutrality.
We never use the term net neutrality very deliberately because it's not a legally definable term. We call it quality of service obligations.
Is there any intent to kind of revisit that?
No.
Are you going to come back? Because it's pretty.
No.
It is what it is.
Well, I mean, the point is, it's just being implemented now, and the telecom regulators. I assume everybody's familiar, I suspect, with the European wording, which is why you want to quiz me about it. The national telecom regulators are now given these new powers to intervene if they consider it appropriate to do so. If they see an operator is using quality of service degradation, essentially, as an anti-competitive weapon against their competitors. I mean, that's the core of it. But also there are transparency obligations as well about what network management methods and tools they might use and giving advice to consumers in those circumstances. And that's what's on the table at the moment. Now, the regulators now have to decide whether and how to use those powers when it would be appropriate to do so. So Ofcom, for example, I think has published a consultation document about it, which you can see. I know Mrs. Cruz is having a look at the broader issues about net neutrality, I think more in the context of the evolution of this digital agenda, to see whether there are considerations in the long term that need to be considered, and they come from different directions. I mean, a number of people are concerned that this provision may inhibit investment in networks. Others are concerned that it's undermining the fundamental principles of the internet, which seems to me that we probably got the compromise about right if nobody is happy with it. But we'll wait to see. But I think there's no intention whatsoever of revising something which has, first of all, where the problems are not really evident yet. That's my contention. You may disagree with that. I don't think there are any evident problems yet. We've given the regulators some new tools. So we prepared the regulators for tools that they might need to use if there is a future problem. Now, I don't see that we need to revise tools that I've given to the regulators if there is a future problem when they haven't even used them, because we don't know how they're working, so why should we revise them?
But you have empowered the regulators with certain quality of service, degradation.
And I mean, the regulators are obviously involved in the whole consultation process. Now, as I understand it from Bob Boucher yesterday, the bill that his subcommittee is about to publish follows on almost exactly similar lines. Because, you can correct me, but my understanding is that following the Comcast judgment, that the FCC found that the tools that it thought it had to deal with anti-competitive service quality deterioration, it didn't have after all. So, which has meant that that the legislature has had to intervene to give the FCC those tools. Now, essentially, we have already done that anyway in our regulation because we have a slightly different way of going about things.
Interesting.
Is that a fair summary?
I think that's a fair summary.
Okay, all right.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
All right. So has that answered everybody's questions about net neutrality, or do you want to argue with me about it?
You can.
I'm happy to take questions now further.
Sir, so I'm Frank Turner with Business Software Alliance. Thank you very much for stopping by to see us. You've been sort of involved in energy policy for more than a decade now. We were actually meeting with you when I was living in Brussels more than 10 years ago. So it's a real treat to have.
I'm not sure whether that's an accolade or not in politics.
Well, either on you or on me, but...
It sounds as if my career hasn't advanced very much, but yours has.
And I don't know whether for a European moving to Washington is an advance or not. I wanted to ask you about the proposed regulation on ICT standardization, on standards.
Yeah.
I think so far, where the Commission is going with this doesn't yet have the raise the specter of preferences against royalty-free or IPR-free standards, but we definitely, I mean, proposed regulation doesn't exist in a vacuum, and definitely yep. such ideas have been batted around, well, in Washington, but also definitely in Brussels or around Europe. What is your perspective on the regulation of standardization and specifically the issue of IPR and royalty-free standards? I mean, I think you shared a hearing on this recently on
Well, I mean, my committee is doing a current project on standardization, on standardization in every sector globally. So, so ICT will be part of that. As I understand it, I'm not sure there's going to be a separate regulation on standardization. I mean, the Commission has produced a discussion paper on ICT elements, but it will be encompassed in the general provisions on standards that will be published in November. Mm-hmm. And part of the the European the regulatory framework is basically a coordinating framework, but also indicates the approved standards bodies who can then create standards that can be used then within European regulation effectively. Now, I think one of the important developments as far as ICT is concerned is that that standards regulation has been around for a long time, and there have been a lot of consortium-based ICT standards developed in specific areas and sector-specific applications. And those standards bodies should be recognised under the new framework. In my view, it is the role of this standards document is not to be prescriptive about the way in which these standards are formulated. I think that it has to be largely a market based matter. So as far as the standardisation policy is concerned, I mean it should be strictly neutral. Now there are separate issues then involved about, for example, how public administrations buy IT products and what standards they specify, which is a policy issue and a separate one, which is not fundamentally under my jurisdiction. But I mean, I think it's important not to confuse the two. So I think that those are going to be some of the key aspects. I think the other key aspect of this standards package. Is going to be the way is going to be to make the package much more outwardly focused than we see at the moment, so that the participation and engagement of the European Union in standardisation discussions needs to be explicitly encouraged, but also that we should also be facilitating more work in joint working with other partners. I mean, some of the discussions I've been having here is the fact that I think that there are many US and European standards organizations that could be working together on new developments, on new technologies, where standards will be a powerful mechanism. And specifically for the IT space, a good example will be things like e-health, for example, and smart grids, data interchange between governments, all these sort of areas. So hopefully we'll see something rolling out of that. It'll take some time, but... and we're trying to bring that into the framework of the broader discussions about creating a transatlantic market, which has also been a permanent feature of my 10 years here, but doesn't seem to advance much beyond the arguments over chicken.
Art.
So Ofcom has its net neutrality consultation, the EU has one going. Where do you see those proceeding pace? Converging, diverging, anything coming?
Well, I mean, we have a conclusion because we have the regulation. or the directive. So, I mean, what Ofcom is consulting is ways in which it might use the powers that it has. So, if you like, it's a consultation about how it should implement the provisions and if and when it should use them. Because these are entirely new provisions. As far as the Commission is concerned, I mean, the Commission is the overall custodian of the framework legislation, but it doesn't apply the rules operationally. That's left to member states, and the other participants in the discussion about implementation will be the new body of European regulators in electronic communications. There's another one to add to the app called BEREC. And we've given them more powers to consult together and to make determinations together. And this will be exactly the sort of area where we expect them to be consulting with each other to ensure that they use these powers consistently. Because we don't want to be in an issue like we, for example, we are at the moment in data privacy, where the national regulators on the data protection legislation do have inconsistent standards at the moment, and even though they meet together regularly under the 29 working party, there's still too much inconsistency on data protection legislation across the European Union.
That's about the skirts of it, how they would all function within your framework.
Well, I mean, that's how the framework functions. Now, the work that Mrs. Crozes is doing is a much broader piece of work to consider the whole issues about net neutrality in the context of delivering these long-term strategic objectives and whether there are any concerns presented by that. And she may well decide that there aren't any particular, or we've dealt with them already. So she has a different remit, effectively, to consider.
I think we have a question down the end.
Hi, Alexa Black with Bauer. I'm going to view the conversation a little bit towards internet. We were just at ICANN in Brussels, actually,
yep.
The home of the European.
I know, well, I was there as well, yes.
Yeah. And I would like to get your views on how you see issues like regulation, particularly around, you mentioned data privacy and how there's
yep.
all these different variations of national laws. The problem comes into effect when you're trying to battle and really do something about security issues. And the internet really does not know any boundaries, but the individuals, organizations, are held to a particular legal system, right? So we're now facing potential regulation from not only here in the U.S., but potentially from other boundaries, and it's impossible to know what actually applies. So to what extent is this being discussed in the European Parliament? I've seen a lot of different regulation coming from EU, from UK. Germany just threatened DANIC with taking over. So where is the consensus?
Well, I mean, the answer is there isn't one at the moment, which is what I just said. And the part of the problem is that we do have a European Data Protection Directive, but it goes back to 1995. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, bearing in mind what I said about evolution since 2000, I mean, this is antique. But, I mean, the problem is because it's quite a controversial issue, there has been some reluctance to reopen that and to modernise it. Now, Mrs. Reding, Vivian Reding, who was previously Commissioner for Information and Society, has on her agenda a review of the operation of this directive because we